Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are dismissed. We are in the middle of a series called Love Songs. And if you're a guest today, if it's your very first time, it's a series about a husband and a wife. And it's a series about love. See, God about 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, saw fit to have a man write down the story of he and his wife's dating and marriage and through life. And we're calling it a mixtape because it's written in poetry and it kind of jumps around. But the book is called The Song of Solomon. And if you've been around for the last couple of weeks, you know, we've been watching this couple. This is now week four of this series. And the couple has just, they're perfect people. Like they love perfectly, and they forgive perfectly, and they speak perfectly. And this is the week we've all been waiting for, because today they have a fight. There is conflict in marriage. And be honest, if you've been in here the last couple of weeks, like, you're a little relieved, right? Like, oh, thank goodness. They're not perfect. And you may wonder, you know, why if God gave us this book, and this book is about love, and this book is about marriage, why would God include a passage about fighting? And I would say, are you married? Are you dating longer than a week? That's why. Because it's just part of it, right? And so if today's your very first day and you want to go back later and catch up, which I would highly encourage you to do because it's been really great series, you can visit this website. You can go to wellspringchurch.tv/lovesongs. And there you can catch up on the past couple of weeks. Another thing we just started last week is I know during this series when we're talking about marriage and talking about all these things, that things can get stirred up. Emotions can get stirred up. Maybe you have some pain in your past. You have some hurt. And we want to help with that. And so you can just text the word Wellspring to 57682. And we can connect you with prayer. We can connect you with a circle of people to walk with you. We can actually connect you with some professional counseling help because there's no shame in that. I've been to counseling. My wife's been to counseling. We've all been to counseling. Counseling is just simply going to some God-ordained people, some people who've been equipped by God to help you kind of wrestle with some of the scars and some of the wounds that we all have. And so I would highly encourage you, if you haven't already, to text that number and connect with us so that we can help. But like I said, we're going to jump right in today because our couple fights today, and we're all kind of excited about that because they're not perfect. Like I said, if you're a guest, the stars of this story are King Solomon and his wife, and today we're going to see them have a fight. Well, actually, that's not true. We are going to watch his wife describe their fight to her friends. That's what I know. The Bible is so irrelevant. It's so ridiculous. Like, that never happens in real life. But a couple thousand years ago, wives would kind of describe their fights to their friends, and husbands would describe their fights to their friends. So we're going to see them have a fight. And the reason I think God included this in this book is because this fight reveals the most dangerous thing that we can bring to our relationships, and specifically that we can bring to our marriages. In fact, it's one thing that if we can decide to stop bringing this to our marriage, this to our relationships, we can make everything better. And my goal today is that we leave here with some tools so that we can make our conflict less painful and more productive. My goal is not that you walk out of here and never fight again. You will fight. I don't trust married couples that tell me they never fight. I look at them and I think, well, you're either lying or you never talk to each other. Like, I'm like, how do you not? You're humans. There's going to be conflict. But I believe God's plan is for that conflict to be less painful and for that conflict to be more productive. And the way that works is by identifying this one thing that we all bring in with us, that we have to stop bringing in if marriage and a passionate marriage is really the goal we have for our life. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to Song of Songs. We're going to be in chapter 5 today, Song of Songs chapter 5. And like I said, this is the queen describing this fight to her friends. The fight happened the night before. This is the morning. She's drinking some coffee. She's hanging out at Starbucks with her friends, and she's telling them about this fight she and her husband had the night before. And here's how it starts. She says this. She says, "Look, I slept, but my heart was awake when I heard my lover knocking and calling. Open to me, my treasure, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. My head is drenched with dew, my hair with the dampness of the night." Okay, a lot going on here in this line. A lot going on. So let me try to explain it real quick. Hold on, this is all jacked up. I got to fix it. Okay, sorry, I am super ADD, and if it's not right, I get real distracted by it. Okay, just a little window into my world. So when he says his head is drenched with dew, his hair with the dampness of the night, here's what's going on. Jerusalem was a climate where there'd be a lot of moisture in the air at night. When the air would cool down, the moisture would turn to dew. And so what this is really revealing is that it is super late at night. He was out late at night. Like, it's probably 2 or 3 a.m. That's why his hair is drenched with dew. That's for us to know. It's for us to know how late it is. Remember, she's telling this story, so she's probably laying it on for her friends to say how late it is, okay? So super late at night, and she is in her bedroom. Because back then they had separate bedrooms for the king and the queen. Terrible idea. Do not apply that principle in your marriage. Not a good idea. But they did. And so it's like 3 a.m. in the morning. He's banging on the door to her bedroom, and he's laying it on. He's saying, "Open to me, my treasure, my darling, my dove, my perfect one." Yeah, it's 3 a.m. and he's trying to get into his wife's bedroom, because he wants to have a special intimate moment at 3 a.m. in the morning. Let it set in. 3 a.m. That's when he thinks it's a good idea to bang on his wife's window. And say, door. Say, let me in. Now, she tells us, "I slept, but my heart was awake." Here's what that means. She means I wasn't really asleep. I was in bed. I was kind of restless. I was kind of tossing and turning. What I think happened, okay, and it's not just me, scholars agree. What we think happened is this. Solomon and his wife had a special evening plan. Let's just say it's their anniversary, okay? They had a special evening plan. There was going to be some dinner. There was going to be some dancing. There was probably going to be some special time after, and they were all looking forward to it. And something happened. Solomon is the king. His kingly duties took him away from the palace, and it went longer than he thought it would. He said, "I'll be home by 8. He got home at 3 a.m. 8 to 3 a.m. That is 5 hours of anger for his bride. There were no cell phones. There were no texts. So she just waited and waited and waited. And the food got colder and colder. And as the food got cold, so did her heart. And she just got angrier and angrier. She finally got in bed, but she tossed and turned because she was so mad. You ever been so mad that you can't sleep? Just so mad you just keep thinking about, "I can't believe he said that. I can't believe she did that." But is that just me? I guess it's just me. Sorry. So that's what I think happens, okay? She's in bed. She's mad. She's mad at him. He comes home. He knocks on the door. He's like, hey, let's go. Again, I know the Bible is so irrelevant. That's never happened to you. You never had a situation like that. But a couple thousand years ago, couples had these problems. And so he knocks on the door. "Hey, let me in. Let's go. I'm ready." She's having none of it. Here's a response. "But I responded, I've taken off my robe. Should I get dressed again?" Translation: "We can't be together because I'm already naked." Solomon's probably thinking, one less step. And then she adds, "I've washed my feet. Should I get them soiled?" Now, that's a as a Jewish custom, they would ceremonially wash their hands and feet when they would go to bed. It was a reminder to pray and ask God to forgive their sins. Had absolutely nothing to do with this encounter. She's just bringing Jesus into it because she's just, I don't know why. But listen to me. So he's on the outside. He's going too far. Hey, let me in. Her response is, sorry, I can't get out of bed. I've already taken my clothes off. She's mad, and she's fighting back. Solomon is undeterred. My lover tried to unlatch the door, and my heart thrilled within me. Solomon is like, no, let me in, let's go. And the Hebrew actually kind of says that there's this idea that, like, he almost tries to, like, shoulder the door. Like, he's like, really? He's like, no, let me in, let me in, let me in. And somehow it says, my heart thrilled within me. She's like, there's like a, her heart softens, and she's like, oh. Okay, he was probably out busy, and so she gets up. Now remember, she's telling the story, so this is what she says happened. She says, I jumped up to open the door for my love. He says, hey, let me in. He tries to nudge, she feels bad, she jumps up, she says to open the door. But there's more context here. And my hands dripped with perfume, my fingers dripped with lovely myrrh as I pulled back the bolt. Okay, so in her language, she got up and went to the door. But what this tells us is she got up and went to the mirror, not to the door. She got up, she went to the mirror because she'd been laying in bed. She wanted to make sure she didn't have any creases on her face, you know, didn't have any junk in her eyes. She fixes her hair. She gets all pretty. She gets some perfume. She perfumes up. And then she goes and unbolts the door. And I understand this is a common thing. Husbands, how many times has your wife said, I'll be ready in 5 minutes? Their 5 minutes is our 30 minutes, right? Because we use a watch. You'll get that in a minute. But no, she's telling the story. I got up and went straight to the door. She didn't go straight to the door. No. She got up, she primed, she did all this. Then she went to the door. Had to have taken some time. Had to have taken long enough for this to happen. I opened to my lover, but he was gone. And my heart sank. How long do you think she spent getting ready? And then had the gall to tell her friends, I got up and went to the door. Long enough for him to give up and for him to take off. Her heart sank, but she wasn't deterred. I searched for him, but could not find him anywhere. I called to him, but there was no reply. Again, she's telling the story. She searched for him, but remember what we know about the story. She is without clothing. So her searching was probably a little bit more than sticking her head out the door. Solomon! Solomon, come back, I'm sorry! She had any clothes on. She didn't search. She screamed. That's what my wife does in our house. She doesn't search for our children. She screams for our children. David! I'm like, just walk down. We don't have to yell. That's what Miss Solomon did, I believe. And he was gone. She then goes back. She gets in bed. And I believe, and scholars agree, that she falls asleep now. And she starts telling her friends about a dream she had. Because there's no way this is real. There's no way this actually happened. Because the next thing she says is, the night watchmen found me as they made their rounds. They beat and bruised me and stripped off my veil. Those watchmen on the walls. Like, she's talking about her guilt. She went to sleep and basically dreamed a 1980s video, you know, like a love video. And she, like, the watchman came, and she's just feeling guilty. Right? So she gets up the next morning, and she's telling her friends the story. And then she looks at him, and she says this. She says, make me this promise, O women of Jerusalem. If you find my lover, tell him I am weak with love. Tell him I'm sorry. Now, again, I know the Bible is so irrelevant. We have a couple fighting about a miscommunication about sex. Never happened to you, I know. But it happened to them. Now, I have a question, because here's what I know is happening, because I've taught this passage before, and at 8:30 I did it. I know what's happening. You're all wondering the same thing. Who was wrong? Whose fault was the fight? So here's what I want to know. Raise your hand if you think Solomon was wrong. Come on. Not as many as last hour. This will be fun. Raise your hand if you think Mrs. Solomon, the queen, was wrong. Yeah. Or raise your hand if you're like, please just stop. Don't ask me any more questions. Please don't talk about this. Well, let me help. Here's the answer. They both were wrong. They both were wrong because they both brought in the most dangerous thing you can bring into a relationship. The most dangerous thing you can bring into a marriage. And in fact, if you've been here for the last couple of weeks, we have been talking about this for the entire series. Because if you recall, what we said for the entire series, what this book proves, this book in the middle of our Bible that God gives us, what it proves is that God gives permission for passion. Within the confines of marriage, God gives permission for passion. He says, I want you to have a vibrant marriage. I want you to have an on-fire marriage. I want it to be great. I want it to be electric. I want it to be amazing. I give you permission for that. Not only do I give you permission, God gives the pathway to passion. That's what this book is. This is the pathway to passion. This is the pathway to experiencing the type of love you've always imagined. And what is the pathway? The pathway to passion is sacrifice. Serving one another. This is the first time in this mixtape, in this love story, where Solomon and his wife do not sacrifice for each other. In fact, they do the very opposite. And by doing the opposite, they bring in the one thing that'll kill your marriage faster than anything else, the one thing that causes more conflict than anything else, the one thing that is more dangerous than anything else you can bring into your marriage. Because the opposite of sacrifice is selfishness. This is why they were wrong. It's because they were both being selfish. Now, I know that's not a new idea. You get selfishness. You are selfish. I'm selfish. We're all selfish. If you don't think you're selfish, let me ride with you home in the car and I'll see you're selfish. Everyone is selfish, right? We're all selfish. The problem is we've begun to accept selfishness. We've begun to accept a level of selfishness as just part of life. So that's why I'm pointing it out. That's why I believe God points it out in this text. That's why it says, hey, this can't happen. This can't be. You may ask why. The answer is very clear. It's because selfishness poisons relationships. Now, I know what you're thinking. Poison? That's a little strong. Poison? Okay. Well, what else do you call something that kills everything it touches? Name for me one thing in your life that's ever been made better by selfishness. Name one time in your life where you thought, you know what, I am so happy that my parents are selfish. I am so happy that my mother-in-law is selfish, that my father-in-law is selfish. I am so happy that my husband was selfish today. I was so blessed by his selfishness. You know what? Dear Facebook, little Timmy was at school today and he took 3 kids' lunches. Hashtag selfish, hashtag blessed. Never in your life, have you ever thought selfishness is a good thing? Have you ever thought, I wish I had more selfishness? I just wish there was more selfishness in my life. Life. The only selfishness that you deal with in your life is your own. Got real quiet there. You could see it in anyone else. And my contention to you today, what I believe God is teaching us through this passage, is what he's been teaching us for the entire series. The pathway to passion is sacrifice. The opposite of sacrifice is selfishness, and selfishness poisons relationships. So, married couples, dating couples, singles making decision about marriage, you have a very clear choice when it comes to your relationship, when it comes to your conflict, when it comes to how you interact with each other. And make no mistake, it is a binary choice. It is one or the other. You cannot have both. Here's the question we're going to wrestle with today. In your marriage, in your relationships, when you think about the perfect picture moving forward, do you want poison or passion? Because you can't have both. So here's something I never thought I would say in church. Here's something you never thought you'd hear in church. Here's something as adults we never thought we'd need to know, but I'm going to say it, okay? Say no to poison. Say no to poison. Now, here's why I say that. Everybody has a moment, and we're just going to talk for a second. Nobody's looking around. It's just me and you. Everyone has a moment when they're fighting. Everyone has a moment in the fight, and you do. Don't say you don't. Everybody does. Where it clicks in your head, oh, no, I might not be right. Oh, no, she might have a point. What am I going to do? Everybody has that moment where they think, you know what, yeah, she's right. I'm being selfish here. He's right. I'm being selfish. But what do we do? Don't say what you wish we did. Don't say what would be on the highlight reel. What do? We keep fighting anyway. We keep fighting because here's what we say. Oh, I may be being selfish, but I'm just being a little selfish. It's just a little bit. It's just a little selfish, and they're selfish too, and it's just a little selfish, and I can be a little selfish. That's what we do with selfishness. That's why I want you to start labeling it poison. Because would you put just a little poison in your husband's food? The answer is no, by the way. No. 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 When you're making your kids breakfast, if you spill just a little bit of, are you like, ah, it's not, it won't be that bad. It's just a little poison. No, that's what's happening here. And that's what I'm trying to get you to see. I want to leave God's trying to get us to see. This selfishness is poison. And a little selfishness can cause a world of destruction. So say no to poison. This is why Solomon himself, this is why he was wrong. It's because he was being selfish in this moment. It's 3 a.m., bro. I don't care what the plan was. At 3 a.m., the plan has expired. It's over. Only reason you should knock on the door and say, I'm so sorry, I'm late, babe, love you, good night. And then you close the door and you go, well, no, you get in bed with her because you don't have two beds because that's weird. But this is the story. This is why Solomon was wrong, because he asked. Now, I have to be careful here, because I said they were both wrong. Solomon was wrong for being selfish because he asked. The queen was wrong for being selfish and saying no. What? Again, wasn't the act of saying no. There are a myriad of reasons to say no to intimacy with your spouse. One of them being, it's 3 a.m., you fool. It's a very legitimate reason. But see, there's more to it. We know what was actually going on in her mind and in her heart. We know she was mad. We know when Solomon knocks on the door that she taunts him. We know that she punishes him. Again, her excuse was, I can't get up and be intimate with you because I'm already naked. That was not a legitimate excuse, ladies. That was punishment. Her husband had misbehaved. He had done something she did not want him to do. And she was withholding intimacy to punish him. She was wielding intimacy as power. And the definition of that is selfishness. She was being selfish in that moment. And so they both were being selfish. They both were injecting poison. And when it comes to sexual intimacy, above a lot of others, there's a lot of selfishness that can happen. And luckily for us, God actually speaks directly to that. Very quickly, I want to jump out of Song of Solomon. I want to jump to the New Testament, to our buddy Paul. We talk about Paul a lot here at Wellspring. Paul wrote about half of the New Testament. Paul would go around and start churches, and he would write letters to those churches to teach them how to be Christians. We believe God was speaking through Paul when he wrote those letters. Paul addresses this issue in his letter to the church at Corinth. He addresses this issue of selfishness when it comes to intimacy inside of marriage. And here's what he says. Don't worry about turning there. I'll put it up on the screen. 1 Corinthians 7. Here's what he says. He says, the husband should fulfill his wife's sexual needs, and the wife should fulfill her husband's needs. The wife gives authority over her body to her husband, and the husband gives authority over his body to his wife. Pause. This is completely and perfectly equal. One does not dominate the other. One does not control the other. This is mutual submission. This is mutual giving over control. So there is no room in this text to use it to abuse, to take control, to have power. If you're doing that, you're a heretic and you're wrong. Because that is not at all what Paul's saying. This is mutual. This is the pathway to passion and sacrifice. This is serving each other. But here's why it matters. Here's why he's making this point. He says, do not deprive each other of sexual relations. Do not withhold it from each other. Do not withdraw from each other in an effort to make a point, in an effort to punish. Do not do that. There are tons of valid reasons for doing it, but anger is not one of them. Just to punish someone is not one of them. He says, do not deprive each other of sexual relations unless you both agree. Unless you both agree to refrain from sexual intimacy for a limited time so you can give yourselves more completely to prayer. He's like, look. If you agree together, that's fine. But again, please hear me, ladies. This is a covenant relationship. If the covenant is broken, this does not apply to you. If there is adultery, you can withdraw. If there is abuse, you can withdraw. If there is abandonment, you can withdraw. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about Solomon and his wife. They were having a fight. There was no abuse going on. There was no abandonment. There was no adultery. Bro was late. And she was mad. And she was wielding power. She was being selfish. And she was being selfish with intimacy. And that's incredibly dangerous. And Paul explains why. He says, after you fasted, he said, you should come together again. You should be intimate again so that Satan, our enemy, the devil, the guy who hates your guts, wants to destroy your life, won't be able to tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Here's what he's really saying. He's saying, hey, guys, this is why selfishness is such a big deal. This is why it's poison. When selfishness walks into your marriage, temptation walks in with it. I need you to hear that. When selfishness walks into your marriage, temptation walks in with it. Ladies, when you're selfish with intimacy, when you withhold passion, you inject poison. Husbands, when you withhold intimacy, we talked about being verbally generous last week. When you withhold a verbal connection, what you're doing is you're inviting your wife to be tempted to go find it somewhere else. See, that's how sin works, man. Satan is the worst. He is the worst. He is constantly at work. And when selfishness finds its way in, temptation walks with it. So you think selfishness is about you getting what you want. That's the way sin works. You always think sin is delivering what you want. But the only person who gets what they want when you sin is the devil. That's it. He's the only one that benefits. You suffer. Your spouse suffers. So again, let's go back to the question. Poison or passion? Which do you want? In the moment, they both chose poison. They both made mistakes. And you will make mistakes. You will mess up. It will happen. You're human. I'm human. We're all human. But it begins by deciding to label selfishness for what it is and learning to say no to poison. And see, here's the flip side. When you say no to poison, what you're really saying is you're saying yes to passion. There's a reward. It's good. You're saying yes to passion. And so I want to go back to this idea that they had an encounter. He knocked on the door. She said no to punish him. And I want to give you a kind of a tip for how to say yes to passion in your life. And it sort of plays off of kind of a thing we see in media, a thing we see in movies, a thing we see on television, but it's sort of real, right? And the reason that we laugh at it on TV is because it's sort of real. And it's this, is that a lot of times in marriage, specifically the woman, because again, stereotypically, she kind of controls the intimacy. She's the one who says yes. She's the one that says no. And so a lot of times what ends up happening is sex gets used as like a treat or a reward. Like, again, I talk about this a lot because it's so applicable. If you saw the show Everybody Loves Raymond, remember that show? Deborah and Raymond would be intimate together when Deborah wanted to, because Ray had either been really good or done something she wanted. And a lot of times this idea can come that a wife wields sex like a treat for a dog, you know? And it's like, sit, roll over, stay, speak. Good dog, let's go. You know, That's sort of the mentality, right? And that's sort of what we're taught is that's the way marriage is supposed to be. But if we're saying no to poison and yes to passion, and we're going to take Paul at his word that, you know, when you withhold sexual intimacy, when you use that as a manipulation, you invite in temptation, all that kind of stuff. What if as a way to say yes to passion in your life, what if you created, this is within your marriage, by the way, within your marriage, everybody listen, marriage, within your marriage, what if you created a yes culture around intimacy? What does that mean? That means the default answer is always yes. Whereas the way it is in most, the default answer is no, 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 with an occasional yes thrown in when you need the yard cut. What if you created a yes culture? What if the answer was yes? And what if it wasn't a good time if it was 3 a.m.? What if you're sick? What if whatever? What if instead of just saying no, what if you explained why? Well, honey, you obviously haven't noticed. It's 2 a.m., and I have vomit on my shirt. So, no, not a good time. Number one, husbands, if that happens, don't ask. Don't ask. And if she says tomorrow when I feel better, say okay, and then go clean up the vomit. Be the sexiest thing you've ever done in your life. But seriously, what if you created a yes culture? And instead of saying no, you said not now. And when you did need to say no, you explained why. And husbands, when you can read the room, and because you're understanding who your wife is, what if when you can tell she's exhausted and whatever, what if you don't ask? What if you don't make her feel guilty for being exhausted, for raising children and being amazing? You know what I'm saying? I mean, again, the path of passion is sacrifice. And when we inject selfishness into this, it poisons our relationships. So what if we say no to poison? What if we say yes to passion? That's what happens. Mrs. Solomon has been explaining her story. Her friends have this response. Why is your lover better than all the others, O woman of rare beauty? What makes your lover so special that we must promise this? They did not enjoy the tale. They did not enjoy the story. They are not happy with Solomon. They're bragging on Solomon. Like, who does he think he is knocking on his door at 3 a.m.? My husband did that. He'd know what was up. They're very upset. They're very upset by this. Again, 3,000 years ago, sure, it never happens to you. But back then, women would bag other women's husbands, and they would talk bad about them. Again, probably never happens to you, but it happened back then. They called it Facebook. We don't have it anymore. And so she has a choice to make in that moment with her friends, mad at her husband, furious. He left, doesn't know what to do, trying to figure it out, doesn't know what to do. And they start laying it on. Well, who does he think he is? Knock on your door, what is this? She has a choice, poison or passion. She can't have both. Look what she does. She says, my lover is dark and dazzling, better than 10,000 others. His head is finest gold. His wavy hair is black as a raven. She chooses to praise her husband. See, she thought about it, and she said, you know what? I can either poison or I'm going to have passion. So I'm going to say no to poison. I'm going to say yes to passion. I'm going to say no to the idea that I'm going to bash him right now, that I'm going to make myself feel better, that I'm going to justify my behaviors. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to speak life over my husband. And watch what happens. Watch what happens to her friends. They say this, well, where's your lover gone, O woman of rare beauty? Which way did he turn so we can help you find him? They turn on a dime, and all she did was speak truth about her husband. See, this is one of the ancillary benefits to making God the center of your marriage and loving each other and serving each other and sacrificing for each other. Your friends and family and neighbors and coworkers will notice. And it will make their lives better too. Her friends were ready to rip Solomon apart. She makes one statement and they're like, never mind, we're in. You're right. You're right. That's your husband. We'll help you find him. Now, here's the amazing part. They say, okay, where do you think he is? She knew the whole time. Look at this. My lover's gone down to his garden, to his spice beds, to browse in the gardens and gather the lilies. He's in his man cave. She knew where he was the whole time. She knew where he was. She knew where he was. She just had to work some stuff out in her soul. And so she goes down there. She walks into her man cave. She has an encounter with Solomon. In my brain, Solomon's on his couch playing Xbox. He's chilling. He hears her walk in. And now our boy Solomon has a choice to make. Our boy Solomon has a choice, poison or passion. See, Solomon doesn't know that the reason she didn't answer the door was because she was getting herself ready, putting on perfume. Solomon doesn't know that she had a bad night. Solomon doesn't know that she's been talking to her friends. Solomon doesn't know that she's sorry. And as we read in the text, he speaks first. She just walks in the room, and Solomon has to decide, poison or passion? Because I can't have both. Look what he says. He says, you're beautiful, my darling, like the lovely city of Tirzah. Yes, as beautiful as Jerusalem, as majestic as an army with billowing banners. He doesn't bring up last night. He doesn't say, why didn't you? He doesn't say, if you'd only. He doesn't say, you never. He simply embraces his wife and says, let's fix this. Do you know why? Because he understands that the pathway to passion is sacrifice. He understands you choose poison or passion. And he understands this crucial truth about marriage and conflict. It can change your life if you'll let it. He understands. Making it right is more important than being right. Let me say that again for the men in the room. Making it right, fixing it, is more important than being right, winning. If your goal in a fight is to win, that means your goal is to make your wife lose, which means you're selfish. And you're injecting poison into the relationship. Making it right is more important than being right, because in God's eyes, your marriage is one. You are a team. There is no I win, she loses. She wins, I lose. There's we win, we lose. And when you inject poison in, you both lose. So what Solomon got is, doesn't matter. Now, I believe they had a follow-up conversation afterwards. I'm not saying you sweep it under the rug. But the covenant was not dependent on the conversation. It wasn't like, well, we better talk about this, see if this is going to work out or not. No, there was a, hey, I love you, you love me. We need to figure out what happened, but are we okay? Are we good? Do you love me? Do I love you? See, making it right is more important than being right. Why? Because we have a choice to make. And the choice is poison or passion. That's the choice. So my challenge is very simple. Say no to poison and say yes to passion. And only you can do that. I can't do that for you. But I will say this, and we're going to touch on this more next week, so I hope you'll come back. Because for the last few weeks, we've talked a lot about principles and things that God wants for us in marriage and in our relationships. And today we really got down to the core of it, which is selfishness. It's this thing we're born with, this innate desire to please ourselves and to satisfy ourselves and to serve ourselves. And I just need to be very honest with you, specifically for you, those of you who are here today, and you don't believe in God, you don't believe in Jesus, you're here, you're checking things out. I am so thrilled that you're here, and we want you to keep coming back, and I want you to apply this in your life, and I want you to try it. But here's my goal, my guess, is at some point this week, if you really try to apply this, you're going to come to a wall, and you're going to say, man, this is too hard. I can't stop being selfish. Like, I can stop acting selfish for a time, but I don't know how to stop being selfish. And what I would say to you is that is only something that comes through a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. See, he is someone who can actually transform us from the inside out. He can take out our old selfish heart and he can begin to chisel it away and he can rebuild it with a heart that loves like he loves. And we're going to talk about this more again next week. But again, I just want you to, I'm gonna put that out there. I hope you're applying all this. I really do. But if you find yourself where you're like, man, this is too hard, I can't do it, this is where Jesus steps in and says, hi, I'm Jesus, I'd love to meet you. And I'd love to take you the rest of the way because I've got an amazing life plan for you. And I've got things you can't imagine, and I died for you, and I want to help you, and I want to set you free from that selfishness, and I want to give you a life you can't imagine, but it's going to require me being in charge. But don't worry, I'm a great leader, and I love you, and I want the best for you, so let's go. Let's go together. And so I just feel like I had to say that today because all this is so great and so helpful, but it doesn't work without Jesus at the center. And again, that's what we're gonna talk about next week. And so I just hope this week you can be open with yourself, open with your spouse about where your marriage is and where you want it to be. If you have Jesus in there, great. We're gonna have some more great tips next week. But if you don't, I hope you'll come back next week, and I hope you'll come back ready to make that decision to invite him in, so that you can have the marriage you and your spouse deserve, so that you can have the marriage you were created to have, and so that you can live the life that was meant for you, the best life. That's my prayer as we all attempt to stop injecting poison and to create more passion in our marriages. Let me pray for you. God, we love you so much. We just thank you for how clear you are in your word. We thank you that you love us. We thank you that you came to set us free. I pray you stir in our hearts today. I pray that you just make clear to us the steps we need to take to get rid of poison, to ignite the passion, to pursue each other, and to experience your best life. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen.
Thanks again for listening to the Wellspring Church podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, visit wellspringchurch.tv.